It's March. That means we may not have too many podcasts left. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you. And Phil, the regular season is over. Hard to believe it.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. And in some ways, I'm kind of okay with it.
And not that it's been the worst season, but in some respects, maybe could have hoped for a little more. We're going to break down the way the season, regular season, ended. Look ahead to the Big East tournament. What our hopes and dreams are for the Big East tournament in Madison Square Garden, and see what may be lurking ahead for Marquette basketball here in March. But Phil, you know, it was an important week for Marquette. We were talking last week about how critical it was to finish strong, possibly finish in the top six. Marquette just missed it, finishing seventh. Pretty nice win against Georgetown, but boy, things did not go well at Butler on Saturday.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting, four halves of basketball, because in the first half of the Georgetown game, Marquette really probably played, if not the best basketball they had all season. It was darn near. Just got out and really out-hustled and moved the ball and limited their mistakes against Georgetown. And then in the second half, they let Georgetown back in and had an exciting finish, but ultimately walked away with the win. And then the Butler game, oh, man, they looked like they were fighting in the first half, and then all sorts of things went wrong, some in their control, some out of their control. And, boy, the wheels just came off in a heartbeat.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Butler game here, since it's the most recent thing on our mind. But, boy, Marquette just got boat raced in that game. I mean, there's really no other nice way to say it. But I will say this, you know, not that the officials were the reason Marquette lost, but boy, it was hard to not be bitter about some of the calls that Marquette was suffering from in the first half. It seemed like there were a lot of calls that the officials just horribly missed. A lot of block charge calls that did not go Marquette's way. And again, you know, Butler won by 21 points, and the game really probably wasn't that close in the grand scheme of things. But I just felt that Marquette was really taken out of the game early, because when you have Fisher and Ellenson in foul trouble and they have to sit, and maybe they're not allowed to be as aggressive down low as they would ordinarily be, I felt like a lot of the calls going against Marquette in the first half really took them out of the game.
Well, I mean, Ellenson and Fisher were both in foul trouble in the first half. And you're right. I mean, the second half had nothing to do with the officiating. I don't know if the team gave up or if Butler just was that dominant this game, but you know, the first half, it was definitely influenced by the officiating. At times, they were seemingly playing 5-on-8. One of the ones that really stuck in my mind was Ellenson got called for a charge when he slid past the defender, and the defender kind of flopped. Okay, fine, you're going to call that, you're going to call it. But then maybe a play or two later at the other end, the Butler player, exact same move, going at the hoop, then sliding off to the defender's right, which happened to be Dwayne Wilson. Dwayne Wilson goes down, and they call a block. And it's like they were mirror images. And how you call that the exact opposite way both times for Butler is just insane. And, you know, and like the three-point play where the guy goes and falls, and Fisher happens to be in his area when he falls, so they decide to call it. Like, because that one didn't even make sense. Like, how do you call a foul but not give him three shots? Like, not that they needed any more help, but it was just all around confusing.
And there was one on Wally Ellenson that was just horrific there in the first half, where it seemed like Wally was there like a minute before the Butler player got there, and they called a block on Wally. I was like, man, like, like I said, when your big guys are kind of taken out of the game because either A, Luke or Henry have to sit, or B, they have to play with two fouls, and therefore they're not going to be very aggressive down low trying to block shots or draw charges, it changes the game plan, and it changes the way they're going to approach the game. So, again, not that the officials totally gave the game to Butler necessarily, because Butler, I mean, it was their senior day for some guys who have been there a long time, and they shot the ball extremely well. I mean, but still, I was just a little bitter watching that game unfold.
Yeah, I would say this, like, the officiating was terrible, but I mean, and Fisher's first two fouls were just bad calls, flat out bad calls. But his third foul in the first half, like that, those are the type of plays they shouldn't be making. I mean, I thought it was a flop, and Fisher shouldn't have gotten a foul. But Fisher put himself in a place where he could get called for that, where he clearly kind of stuck his arms out. And yeah, the guy went down like he was a bowl full of jelly. But I mean, that's going to get called. Like, you just can't. And those are the mistakes that seemingly they were trending away from in the back half of the conference season. And all of a sudden against Butler, they decided, you know what, we haven't done a lot of these stupid things in a while. Let's do them all now.
Yeah. Just frustrating game. Because, you know, going into that game, Marquette had a shot at fifth or you know, sixth or maybe even fifth place in the conference, which would have been nice, avoiding that first day of the Big East tournament, which is what we talked about in last week's show. And they put themselves in position to do that with, like I said, a nice win against Georgetown, which, you know, ended with kind of a wild finish with the, you know, Luke running faster than I think I've ever seen him run.
Yeah.
And get just a brilliant pass from Tracy Carter.
Yeah, well,
at the end of that game.
Yeah, and that play – well, and the other thing that's interesting about that play, I mean, it was a heck of a play by Tracy. I mean, he threw it – he was not quite to half court. Luke Fisher was just about the top of the arc when Tracy made the pass, and Carter hit Fisher in stride about 10 feet from the basket, so all he had to do was take two steps and go up, and obviously got fouled, and Luke with – I mean, he's not a bad free throw shooter, but those have got to be the clutchest free throws he's ever hit.
Yeah.
To win that game. They essentially won the game, but Georgetown sure got a really good look at a 60-foot three-pointer.
Yeah, that hit went back iron. I'm like, oh, man. I had, like, the flashbacks to Roosevelt Jones hitting one at the end of the first half of the previous time they played Butler.
Yeah.
But, he almost had it. But, yeah, it was a crazy finish.
It was a crazy finish, but it was a good win, a great win. And, you know, Tracy Carter's really come on of late. You know, I think his assists have improved. His scoring's improved. He's kind of figured out how to, you know, early in the conference season, he would dribble under the basket, not really know where to go with it or look to pass out. And now he's seemingly, you know, trying to get a few more almost post moves down under the basket so he can score and stuff. So he's kind of coming on late, which gives me hope for next year. But it was, you know, the Georgetown win was a good win. The Butler loss was a very bad loss. So, you know, we'll see what, you know, we'll see what this team does, but or which team shows up in the Big East Conference. But, you know, they haven't seemed to be able to shake all the you know, the freshman inexperience that's going on.
You know, speaking of Tracy Carter, Paint Touches had a nice had an interesting article this week about Tracy Carter, and it ran some numbers that suggested statistically he's the second best point guard, has had the second best point guard season since Travis Diener graduated. Like the only Dominic James, I think it was Dominic's senior year, statistically was better than what we've seen from Tracy Carter this year. So that means the season Tracy Carter has had was better statistically than anything we saw from Junior Cadugan or Maurice Acker
or Derek Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, take that for what it's worth. Like I said, it's not necessarily ironclad that he has been the best point guard since, but there are some interesting numbers there about how he affects the offense and you know, turnovers and steals. And so it was an interesting article. Go check out Paint Touches. It's still
yeah.
One of
the, well,
one
and
of the
it
most
was kind
articles.
Of a just to be full disclosure, it was kind of an experimental type statistic, you know, calculation that someone on the internet's put together, but it seems to make sense with the eye test. I mean, Tracy Carter is obviously the best point guard on the roster right now. You know, non-conference and early conference season, that was maybe questionable. But at this point, you have to say for sure he is the point guard on this roster. Hanif, for all his positives and capabilities and tremendous freshman season he's having, is I just don't think he ever will be a point guard. Maybe that's what he projects to in the NBA if he ever gets there. But I don't think he's really set up to be a point guard.
No, I think Hanif is at his best when he has a guy when he has a point guard out there, when Tracy's out there, and when he's playing off the ball. And I think next year there'll be two point guards on the roster, at least, with Rousey and Carter, and we'll see what happens with Marcus Howard, who may or may not commit to Marquette for either this year or next year. So there's a lot of, you know, we'll see what happens there. But there will be at least two point guards, you know, presumably on the roster next year with him. So I don't think he'll be have to handle the ball very much as a point guard. So I think that'll be good for him. And I'm actually kind of excited about the future of Marquette's backcourt with Carter and Cheatham back there, because I mean, you've got them together, assuming for three more years, and we'll see what else, what other kind of guards you put around them. So I think I'm excited for what I've seen from those two guys in their freshman year.
Yeah, and, I'm very excited out of those two. I think, you know, they've been frustrating at times, but that's because they're freshmen, you know, and expectations with freshmen are always too high. I think it is just a universal truth that they're always too high. I mean, coming out of the Italy trip, I mean, we had Tracy Carter anointed as Chris Paul 2.0 for Marquette.
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't think that was realistic. And but I definitely think late in the season he's showing some significant improvement that gives me reason to hope for the future.
Yeah, and I think it'll help him having Rousey. I mean, I'm sure they've been going up against each other in practice, but next year they'll be competing for minutes and see you know, who does what. And I think, who knows? We'll see how it plays out, which one proves to be the better distributor. I think right now you're probably going to have to assume Rousey is going to be the better shooter between the two, but I think maybe Carter might be the better defender. We'll see. We haven't really seen Rousey defend anyone at the Big East level yet, so we'll see how that pans out. So I think that's something interesting to keep in mind for next year. But I think Carter's improvement is at least one positive to take into this week in the Big East tournament. So Marquette finished 7th in the Big East. Again, would have been nice to be one slot higher, just didn't work out. So they finished 8-10, which, you know, the record, not bad, not awesome.
It's a tough Big East, though. I mean,
yeah,
it was
a tough year. You know, it's not like it was a lousy year, but you know, 8-10, you're below 500, so you know that's what it is. And so Marquette will be 7th. They'll be taking on St. John's in the first round. That will be Wednesday. Will be the first game. That's the 7:30 game, or that's a 9:30. I guess
it's,
that's Eastern.
Yeah, 9:30 Eastern, 8:30 Central.
So yeah, it'll be 8:30. Central time on Wednesday night against St. John's. Technically a neutral site game, but really it is a road game for Marquette because that is St. John's home arena. I'll be curious to see what kind of energy we get from St. John's, if it is a time to get fired up, this is our house and our last shot, or if St. John's is just so done with this season. And if you could, I think it might depend on how Marquette starts, because if you can, I think, get St. John's in a hole early, you might get them to shut it down and think that's the year. But if St. John's gets off to a hot start, I think you may get those young guys fired up, and then, you know, you may be in for a fight on Wednesday night.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what the crowd's like, you know, because I gotta think the St. John's fans are somewhat done with the season. You think we've had a rough season,
right?
they've had it by far worse. So I don't know what that looks like, but you would hope. I mean, KenPom's got Marquette projected as an 80% favorite, a nine point favorite. So who knows? As long as the non Butler on the road Marquette team shows up, they should be able to take care of business.
You would hope. And now, see, the tough thing is, I'm not sure Marquette can get much further than that, though, because in the next round you've got Xavier waiting. So yay. So that's the 2 seed, and even if you get by them, then there's probably Seton Hall. Who knows? You may get Creighton again. Who knows what's going to happen in that game? But Seton Hall has been playing so much better as Whitehead has moved to the point guard spot and turned out to be a really good player. And then you're probably looking at Villanova in the last game. So obviously, this is Marquette's last chance to dance. This is their only hope to get into the NCAA tournament. They have to win 4 games in 4 days. To say it's a tall task is probably as big of an understatement as you can throw out there. I'm not sure I see Marquette making it to Friday. But, you know, you take your shot, because crazier things have happened in March. We've seen, you know, in some of these smaller bid leagues, we're seeing 7, 8, and 9 seeds get to the championship games, which is bad for Marquette's NIT hopes, by the way. But we can talk about that in just a minute. But, you know, we can be as optimistic as we possibly can, but we'll see what we get from Marquette. Henry Ellenson looked to be pretty good on that ankle, I'll say that, on Saturday, so I don't think health is really going to be an issue in New York. Maybe the only way health would be an issue would be if Matt Helt can't play, because when you're playing back-to-back games, when it looks like if Marquette can beat St. John's, you're going to be playing two games in less than 24 hours, so you might need a few more bodies to get through that second game. But other than that, I think you're going to be seeing Fisher and Ellenson on the floor for as long as humanly possible, because other than that, you know, what are you saving them for, really? I mean, you got to get as many minutes as you possibly can, and yeah, they're going to probably be exhausted if they can get to Thursday and play Thursday. They'd probably be dog tired if they can make it to Friday, but you know, all chips on the table, because this is it. This is the last hope for Marquette this year. Well,
yeah, they've got to win the whole tournament, but, and you mentioned it a little bit, almost seemingly more important, because I would put less than a 1% chance that they can go to the Big East and beat St. John's, then Xavier, probably Seton Hall, who has just destroyed Marquette all season. And then if, you know, as a reward of all that is likely Villanova at the end, who is clearly a top three team in the country. So very unlikely. The more important thing is right now is you can't lose to St. John's, because one, then you don't get to 20 wins on the season, which kind of has a kind of a magical feel to it, if you will. And two, it would probably kill any hope of the NIT.
Right, because, you know, we were talking NIT projections last week, and Marquette right near the bottom of projected NIT teams, and that's a concern as some of these regular season champs in these small bid leagues lose, which we've seen several, including Belmont. Thanks, Belmont.
Yeah, thanks for nothing, dude.
Screwing us twice this year.
Yeah.
At the beginning and the end. So I think there are already three or four auto bids that are going to regular season champs, including possibly Wichita State, which got upset. Wichita State will be an interesting case because they're top 10 in KenPom, but they're like in the 50s or 60s in the RPI.
Yeah, that would be that. It's going to be an interesting test case, Wichita State will be, in terms of how the committee looks at things and what metrics, if you will, they value over others.
Yeah, but, you know, back to your point on Marquette. Yeah, that's the worst part about you know, having to finish seventh, is not so much that you have to win four games in 4 days, because that is just such an enormous task. It's almost not even worth considering it as a realistic possibility. But the possibility of losing to St. John's, which would be a horrific loss, and like you said, NIT's probably out the window there if you lose that game. And the thing is, even if you win that game, then to get another win to solidify your NIT bid, it's asking a lot to go out and beat Xavier the next night. So I think Marquette's in honestly a pretty tough spot to make an NIT bid, if you ask me.
No, I totally agree. I mean, basically, they have to beat St. John's, and they most likely have to beat Xavier to get in to the NIT, which is why that Butler game was so important to win. You know, and so there are other options other than the NIT, right? There's the CBI, and there's some tournament in Vegas, but those are decidedly even less attractive than the NIT, and I really wonder, especially since Marquette would have to pay, I wonder if Marquette would accept an invitation to one of those.
Yeah, here's the thing about the I don't know about the Vegas thing. I wonder if whoever's running the Vegas thing would chip in for that. But I don't know what that. I don't even want to look up the details of that thing until I have to.
I feel sad just talking about it.
Yeah, Marquette did, I believe, decline a CBI bid. They weren't in the tournament. I guess basically after they weren't selected for the NIT, they announced that they would not be pursuing a CBI bid,
right,
or anything.
And we talked about that last week, and Buzz, go ahead and see yourself out.
Yeah, that was kind of a they had a lame duck coach, essentially, because, I mean, I think Buzz had his office packed before the Big East tournament that year, depending on who you read, and I think it seems like that was just a divorce that was needed to happen as soon as possible. And I think that was a big reason why they declined a CBI bid that year, in addition to the fact that they would have to pay to run the games. With this team, with a coach who is committed to the future of Marquette basketball, and a very young team with basically everyone on the roster returning for next year, I think there would be some interest if it made financial sense to play in the CBI or the Vegas tournament if that's more affordable. I don't even know what that situation is. But I think Marquette might be a little more open to playing in one of those, and I use this term lightly, garbage tournaments after the NIT if it makes sense for the team.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's, you know, getting these players as much experience in pressure situations as possible is and practice time, that's a big deal. You know, and presumably allows Wojo some experimental time and whatnot. You know, I think they'd be inclined to go and do it. You know, but you really want to get into the NIT, and the reason I really, really want to get into the NIT is, you know, Marquette, you know, we're down, we're kind of sour on them a little bit this season. Some of that's because expectations were probably too high, and they didn't meet those expectations, but I don't know that those expectations were something that could have even remotely been met. So you know, going into the NIT, I really do think they're better, perhaps, than we think they are. And the Big East just has some really good teams. I mean, the top six teams in the Big East are top 50 in KenPom. Mm-hmm. So that's a kind of a tough lineup to go in a round robin, you know, conference season. But there aren't going to be any KenPom top 50 teams. Maybe Wichita State, depending on how that shakes out. But it's highly unlikely that there's going to be any KenPom top 50 teams. And the way this team is playing now, as opposed to the non-conference season, I think they could really do some damage, if not win the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that might be fun. Hey, picture this for an NIT Final Four. Marquette, Wichita State, LSU, and Virginia Tech.
Oh, my God. Holy crap.
It could happen. I'm telling you. Hey, I know we all hate that he left, but Buzz got 10 wins in the ACC, man.
I can't wait till he gets 10 wins in the Big 12 next year.
Yeah, or wherever he's ended up. But yeah. So, I'm with you. I really want to see Marquette get in the NIT. So that's why I would love to see. You know, strange things happen in these Big East tournaments, you know, or not big, these conference tournaments, right? I mean, especially when you have teams like whose postseason, whose NCAA seed is almost locked in. You know, they probably know, look, we're probably not going to move up or down very much. We just don't want to get anybody hurt because we want to go to the Final Four. And sometimes, not that teams necessarily say that, but that's kind of in the back of your minds. Like, look, we want to go to the Final Four. I just don't want to get hurt in this essentially meaningless tournament, right? And so sometimes you see upsets like that, and maybe you catch Xavier or Seton Hall or somebody like that napping, and maybe you can pull an upset. But because you see that everywhere. I mean, you see a lot of small, you know, lower-seeded teams advancing in these conference tournaments, and just because different teams approach them different ways.
Well, and you know, the Xavier matchup, there's a couple of things that, I would in no way predict a Marquette victory.
Nah.
But there's a couple of things that are trending its way. One, it seems, and this is totally anecdotal, I'm sure someone with who's far less lazy than I will look this up, but I feel like teams that play, you know, the first day of the tournament and then go on and play the next game against a team who hasn't played, for whatever reason, I think that team that didn't have the bye in that second game plays pretty well. They don't always win, but I think they play pretty well. It's almost as if, you know, the team coming off the bye is a little nappy, you know.
Nappy's an interesting attribute.
Yeah, that didn't work out at all the way I hoped it would. You know, they're maybe napping.
Sleepy,
a little bit.
I think is
yeah,
what.
Sleepy,
yes.
Sleepy is what I'm looking for. Yes, you know. So plus Marquette has played Xavier of the top five teams in the Big East. Xavier is the one that Marquette has played consistently the toughest all season.
I will say that was probably Marquette's best loss the year when they went to Cincinnati and lost to Xavier. I think that's the best Marquette has played in a loss this year. So there's that to hold on to for those holding out hope. So we'll just cross our fingers and see what happens. See, like I said, I basically what we've basically come to the conclusion of, you lose that first one to St. John's, the season's over. You're not getting in an IT bid, and then you're deciding on CBI or Vegas. Lose to Xavier, probably NIT bubble. We'll just have to see how it all shakes out. Beat Xavier, feel pretty good about the NIT, and then win two more, and then we can all celebrate Marquette stealing a bid. That's kind of what we're looking at. So cross our fingers, see what happens. Speaking of Big East news, there were they did announce the Big East postseason awards are starting to come out. We're recording this on Sunday, so there are still a few more players and coaches of the year to come out. But as far as first team, Marquette did have some representation. Henry Ellenson is on the first team. That was pretty big news. I thought, you know, I didn't realize there would be six guys on the first team, but there are. So Henry Ellenson.
What's
Ellenson's
the logic
one.
Of that?
Thing is, all right, like, there's only 10 teams. When the Big East had like 7,000 teams, I thought it was fine having like huge first teams. But so they have six teams, six men on the first team. I don't know why, but they do. So whatever. But anyway, one of them is Henry Ellenson. So good for Henry. Henry also a unanimous selection to the all-freshman team. No surprise there. Hanif Cheatham also named to the all-freshman team. Well-deserved. Again, probably no surprise there. And then looks like the player of the year, freshman of the year, and coach of the year will be announced on Wednesday. I am assuming Henry is going to be the freshman of the year because he has 8 Big East Freshman of the Week awards, including the one that was announced on Sunday. And plus the fact that he was the only freshman on the first team, I would be surprised if anyone other than Henry was the Big East freshman of the year.
If Henry's not the Big East freshman of the year, I would think that the refs from the Butler game were the ones making the vote.
Very well said, sir. Very well said. The only person who I think would even not that there weren't many good freshmen, but I think the only guy who I would even consider voting over Henry might be Sumner from Xavier.
Right, but yeah, the question is, I agree with you. Sumner was the one that came to mind too, but I mean, he missed a several games with injury, and
I bet he does get one vote just because Wojo can't vote for Ellenson.
He can't?
I think you can't vote for your own guys.
Are we sure?
I'm fairly certain about that.
Okay. We're sure it's not just a guideline that they don't vote there for their own guy?
Maybe I'm wrong there, but I'm fairly certain that the coaches are asked to turn in a ballot with everyone on the other team. And so if you are named on all ballots but one, then you are considered a unanimous selection.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I mean, it really doesn't matter. The intricacies of how the Big East votes for some seemingly inconsequential awards are, of no big deal. But yeah, you would think he'd be a unanimous selection. And if he's not, I'd really question that.
And player of the year will be interesting because, Chris Dunn was probably almost certainly the favorite when Big East play began, but I think as it went along, I think you can make a great case for Isaiah Whitehead and maybe Josh Hart from Villanova, who's also on the first team, and then Ben Bentzel. So they were all unanimous, all first team Big East selections. So it's going to be one of those four. So I think that'll be interesting who the player is. I think coach of the year is probably going to be a shoe-in for Chris Mack.
Yep. I would think so. Player of the year, what'll be interesting is if Dunn and Bentzel kind of, take votes from each other, and it's got to be a top four team. It's got to be someone from a top four team, right? I mean, there's no way Ellenson gets player of the year.
Oh, no way. No, he won't get player of the year. No, he definitely won't. I think it's going to be Dunn. If not, I would say Whitehead. It's going to be Whitehead.
If I'm predicting, I'm going to say I think it's Whitehead.
Okay, so that's going to be announced on Wednesday, the first day of the Big East tournament. So keep an eye on that. By the way, this is your last week of Marquette meaningful basketball possibly of the year, but is also your last week to buy our hashtag MUBB t-shirts. And when I say our, I mean the social media shirts that were kind of put together by the folks at Crack Sidewalks, Anonymous Eagle, and Paint Touches. Ruby Q over at Anonymous Eagle was the guy who ultimately made the shirt. But if you missed it last week, I'll just rehash it again. Phil will post a link to it when we post the blog on Crack Sidewalks. But hit that link. It's on Booster. It's a hashtag MUBB t-shirt. Proceeds go to Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, which, of course, is associated with Al's Run. So essentially, you know, same charity that Al's Run benefits. That's what these t-shirts are going to. You're not giving us money. That's where the money's going to. It's $15. It's a pretty cool-looking powder blue shirt, hashtag MUBB on the front, silhouette of Al underneath. And then on the back, it says, your team is evil and must be destroyed, which, of course, is what everybody tweets on game day. So you only have this week to buy it. So if you're thinking about getting it, do it this week because the campaign ends on Friday, I believe. So basically, buy your shirt before Marquette season ends.
Buy your shirt, donate to a very worthy cause, and then you'll get your shirts by the end of March. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a chance to wear them as Henry Ellenson's carrying the team deep in the NCAA on a surprise bid.
Yeah, maybe that's what's going to happen.
It's Sunday. I've been drinking.
Yeah, we're just going to be optimistic and say yes. You can wear those before Henry leads Marquette to Houston, or maybe more likely back to Madison Square Garden for the NIT Final Four.
Or before Henry leaves.
Yeah,
just full stop.
Before Henry announces that he's going pro. Bottom line is this is your last week to do it. I believe it ends on Friday. So again, if you've been thinking about it. They're not going to be on sale again after this week. $15. Again, Phil will post the link on cracksidewalks.com. We'll tweet it out again a couple times this week in case you've missed it. Share it with your friends. As we're recording this on Sunday, I think we're at about 70 shirts, a little over 70 shirts, approaching $500 donated. So thanks to everyone who has bought shirts because I think it's been more popular than I even thought it would be. I remember when Ruby first posted it, say, look, can we get 16? Because we need at least 16 for this thing to go through, and we got 71. He set the initial goal at 50, and we blew past that. Now we're in the 70s. Who knows? Maybe we can hit 100 by week's end. So share it with your friends if you've already got one. Post it on your various social media accounts, and we'll see if we can hit 100 shirts by week's end. Again, it ends this Friday, so go over to Booster. And again, we'll post the links on our social media pages all week long so you can check it out. It's a pretty cool shirt. I'm looking forward to getting mine.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I also have a youth extra small for young Owen that I'll shrink further, so maybe he can wear that on No Red for Owen Day next year against Wisconsin.
He'll be able to fit into it. By the time the new arena opens.
Yeah, maybe that's the goal. The new arena.
All right, as always, folks, we thank you for listening. It's been a great season here on Scrambled Eggs. We appreciate everybody listening. We're going to continue to do regular podcasts as long as the Marquette season is going, so as long as there are games to play, whether that be NCAA, NIT, CBI, Vegas, whatever. Postseason scrimmages, we will tweet practices if that's just what they decide to do after the Big East tournament.
We may try to live podcast as they clean their lockers. Who knows?
Yeah, but again, as long as there's a season going on, we'll continue to do podcasts. Then we'll kind of go in our off-season hiatus where we podcast like once a month as breaking news happens, and hopefully there won't be too much of that.
Or as we try and attempt to make news.
Whenever we feel like we need to make some breaking news happen, we'll record a podcast. But again, we always, as always, thank you for listening. We thank you for buying the t-shirts, those of you who have bought them already. You can hit us up on Twitter with your feedback. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team Twitter handle. Excuse me. You can go on cracksidewalks.com. You can leave comments there under the podcast. And again, that is where Phil will post a link to buy the t-shirts on Booster if you haven't gotten them yet. So you can follow that there on cracksidewalks.com. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. We post the podcast there. And, of course, we're on iTunes, and we always thank you for listening. Phil, let's see. Let's close with a prediction. How far does Marquette go, and what is the Big East final result?
All right. Marquette goes and loses to Xavier in round two, and I actually think Xavier upsets Villanova in the conference final.
Ooh, all right. I am going to go slightly different. I'm going to go the same on Marquette, a win over St. John's, but much like last year, a soul-crushing defeat in the next round. Remember, they won the first game last year and just got their doors blown off in the second game by Villanova. I think similar result this year. Beat St. John's, and then Xavier ends all hope in the next day. I'll say that will result in probably a CBI bid, sadly. And then I'm going to say in the final, I will say Seton Hall will ride the hometown crowd to the final where they will lose to Villanova. I will say Villanova over Seton Hall in the final.
I like where your head's at. That's actually probably a pretty good prediction. I wonder if we can get odds on that.
We'll see.
If gambling were legal.
That is frowned upon.
Especially gambling, by unofficial podcasts.
Gambling is wrong. As always, thanks for listening, everyone. Until the end of the Big East tournament, seashells and balloons. Bye, shirt.